Housing for the Aged Action Group, HAG for short, a housing group for older people run by old people. Present
Raise the Roof!
We advocate for secure, affordable and appropriate housing. So listen up on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 5:30 p.m. on 3CR 855 on your AM dial.
That's right, you're listening to 3CR 855 AM. This is the HAGS, Housing for the Aged Action Group, Raise the Roof show, all about older people's housing issues. My name's Fiona, and we're going to go straight into today's interview because it's such a banger. We're joined in the studio today with two of our workers from HAG who work in the tenancy and retirement team, Sally and Liz. How are you going, guys?
Good, thanks.
Hi,
good
Sally. Hi, Fiona.
Hi, Liz. Hey. Liz is a familiar voice, I'm sure, but we have her today in her capacity as one of the tenancy and retirement workers. And I thought it was timely for us to talk about the importance of this service for older renters and older residents of retirement housing, and to unpack some of the reasons that we think it's really important to have this unique service, and some of the great outcomes that we have. So HAG, one of the first pieces of funding that HAG got way back in the 90s was actually tenancy funding, and we were really thrilled to have that come back into our services last year. And the reason that it's so good is because it allows us to provide a wraparound support for older people who are living in private rental who have intersecting needs, and those needs might be that they need to get out of their rental, or it might be aged care needs, they might have problems with their landlord, and having all of those services sitting in together works extremely well for older renters. So we thought we'd talk a little bit about that. So perhaps we can start by talking about some of your clients. So Sally, would you be able to tell us a little bit about John and the circumstances that brought him to us and what the outcomes were?
Yes, I can do that. Thanks, Fiona. So John was referred to our team by our intake team. The situation was John, who was in his 70s, had been living with one of his adult sons in private rental. As it turned out, John was paying his share of the rent money to the son, but the rent wasn't getting paid to the real estate.
Oh, no.
And so he was facing eviction from the property. We got involved to assist John through this stage, and he was being supported by his other adult son at this point. And John was very stressed about the situation. He was of the understanding that he'd been paying his rent. Mm-hmm. He's done nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Negotiating with the real estate, it became clear that John wasn't actually on the lease.
Oh, no.
But he was the one that's going to suffer the consequences of, I suppose, the actions of the rent not being paid. So we had, I suppose, a situation here where what you would deem elder abuse, that the son had taken off with the money, taken off with his mobile phone. He didn't have that sort of communication with people. We negotiated with the real estate. We did end up at VCAT, and we had John's name removed from any of the documents, so he wasn't liable for the debt.
Yeah,
because it was over $10,000.
Wow.
And that was one of John's concerns, that he was going to have this debt tied to him. But we had that sorted out. I suppose, bought some time at VCAT for him to be able to stay on the property, because we had also referred John through to the outreach team. And he worked with on the workers in the team there who, with their contacts, were able to sort of source a housing option for John. Like during this time, John wasn't feeling great. He was packing up his suitcase, going off to country towns for a few days just to get away. And, you know, no phone and all that sort of stuff. It was a bit hard to catch up with him and find out where he was. His engagement, obviously, with his son that was still in the picture, that relationship became strained and stressed as well.
He must have been devastated as well to lose that relationship with his son.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And he's quite a proud gentleman, and sort of, you know, navigating his situation with him and trying to talk to him about elder abuse. And sort of when you get to know some of the clients, sometimes you've sort of got to tread carefully sometimes raising some subjects, because he's quite a proud man, and talking about elder abuse, he wasn't really up for that conversation.
It's not really a term that people relate to either, is it?
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah, eventually, yeah, housing was found for him in some community housing, and he got moved in, and I think life's pretty good for him now.
That's a great outcome.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the features of this is he probably, had he ever asked for help before, do you know? Had he reached out to services before?
I don't think so.
Mm.
No, no. And I think it was a big step for him to be getting help. And I suppose part of our service, sort of when John was allocated to our team, I think we were out there at his house sort of within 48 hours to sort of talk to him and his son that was still on the scene. And you get a sense of the situation they're living in. He was in this little two-bedroom unit. I didn't go any further than the lounge room, but the amount of trinkets and personal belongings sort of sitting around the place, and he was, you know, talking about, I'll just walk away, like, I'm done. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, so having that face-to-face contact is really, really important.
Yeah, it's really good in situations. Obviously, yeah, he doesn't have a phone, no email. Best way is to get out there in person and help people. So, it was good. It was a sense of accomplishment sort of for him that we got him safe.
Yeah, and now he can perhaps rebuild his relationships with his adult children as well.
Yeah,
which is a great outcome. Well done, you guys. I was also going to ask you about Kim and their daughter, Sally. Liz, do you want to tell us a little bit about that story?
Yeah, so Kim and their daughter also came to HAG through the app, through their intake team, and was a client of the Care Finder team. So within HAG, HAG has a service which is the Care Finder service, so assisting older people to be linked in with essentially in-home aged care services for their health, but also for their housing as well. Housing is part of that Care Finder team. So we've got a team that assists people to be housed while assisting them to be linked in with health supports. And so they had some pretty serious issues with their tenancy, a notice to vacate. The mother was quite old, and so there were challenges, language challenges as well, and so the complexity there was pretty high, feeling very vulnerable. But her daughter was also over the age of 50, so we support people who are 50 plus, so having their mother and daughter who were both over the age and eligible for our service, that was interesting. So they ended up being housed in public housing, which was a really fantastic outcome. And I think one of the things that was great about this was the way that our team, the Tenancy and Retirement team, were able to work with the Care Finder team, and the fact that they're just there, the specialised expertise that the Care Finder team have in terms of knowing how to work with older people with significant health needs. And so our team members were able to kind of navigate about the health and housing issues together as a kind of, you know, both things being relevant and important for those renters. That was a really positive outcome that they were housed in public housing.
Yeah, so yeah. The older woman was in her 90s, I believe, and the daughter was in her 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to us originally because they had an aged care problem, but then through discussion we worked out that actually it was a tenancy problem. And so having those teams working together means that we could get that outcome. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's really great news. So the examples that we've talked about so far are relatively standard in terms of the housing type. So it's private rental, which most people are really familiar with. But the part of this service that I think is less familiar is the retirement aspect of it. And so that includes retirement villages, residential parks, caravan parks, rental villages, that type of housing. Who would like to unpack some of those terms real quickly before we move on to talking about some of those issues? Liz, do you want to do it?
Sure. So yeah, there's a differences between those different types of housing. So a retirement village is covered by the Retirement Villages Act, a different piece of legislation altogether from the Residential Tenancies Act. So the Retirement Villages Act and legislation and regulations places that are mostly over 55s, and some people have purchased a unit in there. Doesn't have to be everybody there, and people living together with some sense of communality, but in their independent places, and so that's retirement villages, and that's the types of issues that I guess we see from people living in retirement villages is quite different from. Then on the other hand, you've got residential parks, which is like your lifestyle village places. They're covered by the Residential Tenancies Act by Part 4A, and they're movable units, distinct from a caravan park, which is a different type of housing again. And there might be older people renting caravans or cabins in a park, and there may be a section of that park that is also for holidaymakers as a kind of separate section.
Yeah.
So, and then you have rental villages, which is where, people would not own their cabin or caravan or a residential park unit, but be renting a cabin, and that's again its own type of housing. So there's so many different kind of things to get your head around, and one of the first things that we have to do, and sometimes we're even people who are kind of highly experienced people are kind of scratching their heads trying to be, okay, is this a part four? Is it a part 4A? And I think that's that's a really important thing to kind of understand, those nuanced differences between the types of housing.
And I think with rental villages, often there's a meal component as part of what they pay as well, which then you get into the quality of the meals and are the meals what people want, and what about dietary requirements and all of that stuff as well. So
exactly.
That's a big headache. Yeah. I've come across that quite a bit.
So How? What are some of the kind of common issues that come up across those types of housing, aside from the complexity of disentangling how it fits in with the legislation and, you know, what it's covered by? Mm. What are some of the common things that you two as workers have to deal with when you're supporting residents in these types of housing?
One of the things I've sort of noticed is that there are, I suppose, some villages, some setups that are, you know, the managers or the owners are doing their own thing, so to speak.
Very diplomatic of you, Sally.
Yeah,
retirement villages, it is a lot of problems with management.
And I suppose that, like, the differences in contracts and leases, and like nothing's the same and everything's got different little quirks, and just trying to, as you said, scratch your head sometimes to work out where things fit in. And sometimes there are contracts that seem to cross over different sort of legislation and things, and it's trying to sort those things out. And then it's sort of, you know, if it's hard enough for us to work out sometimes, you can only imagine how hard it is for the older residents who are sometimes in that situation where they're just signing a bit of paper to secure housing, not really understanding what they're signing into.
And then how do you go about, could you describe how you go about actually getting a look at the paperwork? Because that's a really important thing as well. Yeah. Sally, do you want to talk about how you go? Just give us an example of, I guess, the support that you need to provide.
Yeah, so generally we do an intake with clients to sort of get to know them, find out what the assistance is that they need. Generally, a lot of the things come down to we need to have a look at the contract or the mm-hmm. lease. And as you know, expected, I suppose, with the older clientele that we have, that not everyone's up to speed with IT. I myself, I ain't great with IT sometimes, but trying to negotiate or talk to people and how to get that information to us, because you know, we can't jump in the car to head out to everyone. We do cover the state, so we're a statewide service in the tenancy and retirement team, but our biggest friend is email and phone. Sometimes people don't have email. They just use the basics with their phone, but you try to talk people through taking a photo of documents and sending it through and sort of trying to explain to people we need all pages of the document. So sometimes people might be ringing because they've got a notice to vacate, so to speak, and we say, "Can we need to see that paperwork." And you might only get one page of the notice to vacate, but that doesn't tell us the story of, you know, being able to check that it's valid, timelines have all been followed and all that sort of thing. So you've sometimes got to make multiple calls to people, and sometimes you've got to ask people to go to their local library or something. Generally, the libraries are pretty good helping people scan documents and send those through. Otherwise, it's good old snail mail.
Yeah.
Sometimes we get it in the mail, and you know, it takes a while now, and then we've got to sort of get that scanned and sent back to people, because you know, you get concerned that you're holding documents that they want to keep, sort yeah. of thing. And sort of sometimes people say, "Oh no, I've got copies, that's yours," but you feel responsible holding on to their paperwork. But it can take a bit of back and forth trying to get copies of documents, and you know, sometimes people are like, "Oh yep, I've got a daughter that can help me, but I won't see them for a week," so sometimes things get delayed.
Yeah.
And I know, like, I had a VCAT hearing a couple of months ago, actually. It was the member was sort of like, "Oh, why is it taking so long to get action happening and assistance happening?" And it was like, well, because we had to line up, you know, the client had doctor's appointments, hospital appointments, because they were having medical treatment. So, and I couldn't get there on these days. So, you know, it took a week to yeah. sort of to get in contact. So
yeah.
that's sometimes some of the challenges if people haven't got those tech-savvy skills.
Yeah. yeah. Being patient, talking people through those steps and then advocating to others that that's what's required, that that's how things need to be done
yeah.
with patience and time and specific instructions.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. I was going to ask you to tell us a little bit about Barry, who was in, I believe, independent living units. Can one of you unpack that story for us? I know it was a long one.
Yeah. I suppose, yeah, Barry was in independent living unit that was being shut down. And I think it ended up Barry's being the last resident in there. There were some challenges in terms of, I suppose, mental health issues happening. It got to a point where the owners were wanting him gone as soon as possible. Our team sort of worked and negotiated with the provider to buy more time for Barry, but then there had to be, I suppose, stipulations put in place. There's been no contact between Barry and the management. And with Barry's situation, he was also on the wait list for the outreach team, and the outreach team members stepped in and were able to source a housing option for Barry. It was challenging, I think, to talk Barry through the process and getting him on board with moving on, because even though Barry had been on the phone multiple times with our team, and I know a number of the team members have spoken with Barry over the journey,
yeah.
But trying to get Barry on board to, I suppose, accept this alternative housing option, and trying to, I suppose, paint a picture for him of moving forward and things being better for him.
Yeah.
So it was sort of, yeah, it was good to see, and that he's had that outcome, and hopefully it'll be, yeah, steps forward for Barry. So.
And, yeah, a couple of super complex things about that situation was that the accommodation owners and the managers, it seemed we spent a really long time trying to unpack his rental payments and the ways that the accommodation provider was taking those rental payments. And at some points, I think we thought he was being taken for a ride.
Yeah, a bit. That's right, because they were trying to say, oh, he owes, I think it was like over $15,000 they were trying to say, and it's like, well, how's it got to that point?
Yeah.
And it was difficult for our team to work out because Barry had an ABI as well. So that was an extra layer of complexity that Barry wasn't necessarily across what was going on with the finances. So I guess that illustrates, you know, that's another example of something that, you know, older people, if you're kind of combining ABIs and age plus AOD issues in that situation, so the level of complexity, it's different to probably, Sally, what you and I would have worked in previous organisations, in previous roles.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, it's quite specific.
Yeah, and I think with older people, sometimes it's like peeling back the layers of an onion sort of thing, and you've got to sort of build that trust, because I feel that for that generation, a lot of people have never asked for help before.
Yeah.
And asking for help eventually is sort of a big step.
Yeah.
And for them to trust you to give information.
Yeah.
Sort of for us to be able to help them is a big step.
For sure. You're listening to Raise the Roof on 3CR, 855 AM, and we're having a chat about the retirement team's work and the complexity of working with older people. We might go to a couple of community services announcements, and then we'll come back and chat a little bit more about the team's work and the advocacy.
From a private life so public, as the tabloids caught your tears, being photographed.
How sad, how tragic. But it doesn't have to be that way on the Burning Vinyl Alternative Music Program.
Burning Vinyl, Fridays, 2 till 4 pm on 3CR.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Over five decades, we've been home to hundreds of shows, thousands of broadcasters and guests, and hundreds of thousands of listeners.
This February, we're aiming for 1,000 subscribers.
It's just $40 concession, $80 full.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
That's right, it's Subscriber Drive at 3CR, in case you haven't heard. So you can become a subscriber at 3CR. You can just give the station a call, which is 03 9419 8377, or you can jump online and subscribe at 3cr.org.au. It's a really good way to support Radical Radio and support the incredible work of the station in talking about things that don't get talked about in the mainstream media. So if you haven't already subscribed, definitely consider doing it. It's pretty damn cheap and it's a really good cause. So back to the tenancy and retirement team. I thought it would be a good idea for us to talk a little bit about how the work feeds into the systemic advocacy that we do. So you mentioned earlier, Sally, that there's a bunch of kind of retirement village managers that are doing their own thing, that there's a whole bunch of issues in rental villages with things like, you know, food quality and stuff, and then there's kind of these systemic problems going on. How do you feel that your work as the people that are actually assisting older people feeds into HAG's work in terms of changing the system? Have you had any kind of insights into that since working at HAG?
I think it's good with in our team when we're coming across situations where we're like our minds are blown of what people are dealing with and what they're actually putting up with at some of these places. And I think we generate great discussion amongst the team and sort of wishful thinking discussions as well. But there's often opportunities for us to advocate and highlight people's stories within the organisation and outside of the organisation, and giving people a voice to talk about situations that might be reflected in current topics outside, like in politics and things like that. So I think, I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, well, as part of our funding, we do need to report to the state government about some of the things that we're seeing and in relation to those systemic issues. So because we meticulously report and keep records about the people's circumstances with their consent, of course, then we do feed that back to the government. And Fiona, I know that yourself and Shane meet regularly with people from Consumer Affairs, the Minister's Office, etc. So there's that very direct line. But there's also Housing for the Age Action Group has working groups. Mm. So the Older Renters Working Group, the Retirement Accommodation Action Group, they're the two working groups that our team is directly involved with. And we always make sure that those working group members tell us what their experiences are, tell us what are the issues, so that we can then tell yourself and then you can tell the minister. And so there's that, you know, that full communication, and it's very regular and it's very direct. So I think that is quite an important and as a result of that, we do see change and we do see an impact, because, for example, the Retirement Villages Act and regulations, that's been a long process of consultation where our team and other organisations as well, but our team has played a pretty strong role with talking to the government, because we've got their experience and have worked with lots of people who've had problems with retirement villages. Act, you know, that's those changes are about to kind of come into effect. But also, you know, similarly, when there's changes to the Residential Tenancies Act, we're able to feed in and ask our members what have their experiences been, what would they like to see changed, and in particular with people in residential parks and caravan parks, we do have quite a lot of experience working with people in those types of accommodation.
And I think one of the challenges of this type of housing is that there isn't really very many easy solutions. It's often a long-term process, and when you've got residents who are living on site with the managers a lot of the time, they don't feel that empowered to act by themselves. And so having a service like ours to come in and assist, and then being able to get the government to act as well if possible, is really important for those people. We're just about out of time, so I'm wondering if it's possible for us to give out the contact details in case anybody who is listening may be in that type of housing and needing assistance, or in private rental as well and needing assistance and wants to have a chat with one of these incredible workers as part of the TART team. Are you able to give out the contact?
Our direct line is 03 9654 7389, and you dial line 2. So again, 03 9654 7389, line 2, or to email, it is retirement@oldertenants.org.au. So retirement@oldertenants.org.au.
Yep. And that's we're open 5 days a week, and you can also drop in at the office, which is on Flinders Lane, right next to the brand spanking new stations,
Town Hall. Yes.
And Flinders Station. I have to say I love the tunnel. It's great for people that live in Footscray. Alrighty, so we might have to go out with a song. And this is a song by the James Range Band, and it's called Kunga Kalila. Here we go.
Hola, son.
Para nada, kunga kolla.
Eso no es mucho lama.
Para nada.
Breakfast,
no. Ya no hay por qué no la regata.
¿Y qué? Eso me gasta tanto. Bro, is that Brian?
Hey, gato. Vamos a.
Kumbe kulile, kumbe kulile, it be